Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Flight Through Entirety, the only Doctor Who commentary podcast that thinks that nothing is more festive than widowhood, child labour, and violently electrocuting a bunch of old white men. I'm Nathan.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Todd.
And I'm a hastily put together copper kettle with one of Katie Manning's old black stray cats hand-me-downs draped all over it, much like this podcast.
So it's Christmas in July, and as is now traditional, at Yuletide, we've all gathered together in order to look at the 2008, I want to say, Christmas special, which is The Next Doctor. So we have taken a bit of a break, and we will continue to take a bit of a break. We're going to be back later in the year with the rest of the specials. But for now, what could be more Christmassy than July and some sort of faux Victorian stuff and some even fauxer snow?
Victorian values.
All right. So we have our Blu-ray on the menu screen. And I'm going to ask Brendan to press play and the viewer to press play when I next say our code word.
And what is our code word?
Our code word is mercy. So when I next say that word, I want everyone at home to press the play button. All right, here goes. Mercy.
We'll need it.
And we're off. Yeah, this looks super fake, doesn't it?
Whooshing.
Peter Whooshing.
So do we want to talk about what was going to lead into this at the end of...
Well, drunkenness, I think, about the speed which it appears to have been written in.
So I think Nathan is referring to the fact that there was a cliffhanger ending filmed for Journey's End where the Doctor is travelling in the TARDIS having dropped Donna off. And two Cybermen appear behind him.
And he gets to say, what, what, what?
And he gets to say, what, what, what? And the first scene of this was then going to be the Cybermen fading away, the Doctor realising they were in the vortex and following them. Russell quite rightly decided to get rid of that before this was shot. Look, I love this opening scene because the last time we have seen the Doctor... he is heartbroken with what he has had to do to Donna. And this scene just tells us, we are not going to have another year like with Martha where he's pining for his lost companion for 13 episodes. No, we are straight in and we are having fun.
Well, except that we are pining for his companion in this, we will later discover. But you're right.
And the viewer is.
Well, I mean... How many weeks is it? Is it months between?
Oh, it's months. It's 6 months.
Now months. So we're allowed to have forgotten Donna. Oh, look. So this is Rosita. She is absolutely superb. What do you think, Todd?
Yes, I like her a lot. Rosita.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and look.
It's the new Doctor.
It's... It's CBS's answer to Dr. Quinn Medicine Really? Woman in 1996.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, if CBS were going to cast somebody, they would cast David Morrissey in that coat and everything and call it Doctor Who, time traveller.
I think he
works for me.
Yeah. He's got a very old...
Young face.
Well, young old face. No, he's got a very old kind of a classic Doctor kind of vibe to him. It's a big... It's a big performance. It's a sort of Colin Baker-ish performance.
So. I think it's a bit Jack D on uppers. He's got, if you know the current host of I'm sorry, I haven't a clue in everything else that he does. I like David Morrissey from what I've just seen of all 0.3 seconds of him is because he's a lot naughtier and bigger than how he's playing it. I think he'd be one of those rambunctious, a bit more Tom. What's his favourite thing you like to do, Doctor? Pubs. Like doing pubs.
Oh, dear.
Meeting ladies in pubs.
Yes.
That is really...
I want to say it's crap, but I have a cat that does that.
But it's not even a cat. Like that is actually quite shocking, that Cybershade thing.
It feels like Shirley Bassey's comeback. I don't know why.
I just think it's a Taran Wood beast that the Cybermen have picked up and then slapped on a mask.
My headcanon is that it is a cat, but which is why it has has brass hands so that it can climb things. Oh. And so later on it can, you know, drive a hansom cab later. But that the whole cyber kind of process floods it with hormones and turns it into a person in a sort of gorilla suit.
Yeah. I haven't seen any of this. I'd like to think Russell is having a go at the Taran Wood Beast. I really liked it. And it wasn't just that he wrote it at 3 a.m. in the morning after two bottles of whiskey.
I also think it didn't turn out the way it originally intended. And the name Cybershade suggests this, that they were going to be sort of more ghostly. Spectral, ghostly thing.
Raston yes. Warrior skin suit thing.
But, I mean,
this is fun.
This is Christmas and we're already pissed, you know, like, like this is fun. And
ow, you know, ow, ow, ow.
And we've got, like, you know.
We're hurting David Tennant's bum, you know.
Sphincter clenching.
That's really hurting.
We're not going to burn through our
hooray.
Yes,
trousers at all.
Yeah. No, but, you know, like a scene where David Tennant gets... Yeah, that hurts. Good. I've wanted that for 3 years.
You know? Morrissey is completely unconvincing as the Doctor, and I don't mind it a bit.
No, I think so too. And I think this is the big problem.
He's your dad's idea of who Doctor Who
should
exactly.
be. Well, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was never going to be the next Doctor because he's not Cockney and he doesn't know pop culture and it was never, ever going to be this.
Yeah.
But I think we didn't know that, did we? Or did we?
No, we didn't. We absolutely didn't. They kept it under wraps. As soon as Confidential comes out, you know, Russell says, of course, he was never going to be the Doctor. But because we've just done this fake out regeneration...
Yeah.
A few weeks ago. And because everyone knows that David is leaving by now, so between that... it was before Journey's End went out that it was announced that Tennant was leaving, which is why that regeneration had such an impact. They're playing with it again here. And I think, Richard, in terms of him being unconvincing, it is, as Nathan says, because he is the public's idea of what the old Doctor Whos are.
Yeah.
And to the point that... As opposed to Tennant, he is very sexless. And there are a couple of moments here and there where Rosita kind of looks at him and he's completely oblivious to any romantic overtures because he's a classic Doctor Who.
But he said that he actually went and looked at, like, the first four Doctors. That's who he studied to come up with this. But I like the fact that he's so unconvincing because we know that he's not the Doctor and the Doctor's... half fooled by it, you know.
Yeah.
Should we have moments of honesty? These were the days when several of us were being very careful to not look at the giveaways, weren't we? I think, Brendan, you and I were. I thought he was.
You did?
And I didn't believe
he's very
such.
He's handsome in that shot.
He's dashing.
I mean, he's incredible.
I can see him coming, emerging erectly from a mill pond and exciting 18th century young ladies in bodices.
But
he's a lovely pile you have, Mr. Arcee.
He is a plausible choice to cast.
I like
the next
that
Doctor.
A plausible choice.
Yeah,
and he's doing Scroot. He's doing Pertwee Stare. He's kind of lovely. He's just so enormously Irish. I'm not being racialist. He's just enormously Irish.
I actually think that the best thing about him is him
Potato.
Being sort of. You know, a bit lost. And then drunk. Later on, I think he does a great job, you know, when he finds out who he is. But it does, I mean, this is supposed to be, you know, the hook for the story, isn't it? Like, it's called The Next Doctor. That's what all the publicity was about. Mm. He was appearing on chat shows and people were saying, are you the next Doctor and stuff like that. Like, it was a thing. But I just don't know that it works as a hook.
Well, maybe initially, but it becomes very obvious that he's not the next Doctor.
Yeah. I think it's the moment where he says the Cybermen landed onto London or appeared onto London or something. It's kind of like you haven't really mastered the whole kind of lingo thing. He's a little bit too Victorian, I think.
Well, he's... probably hungover. I mean,
something I love about this story
it's Bat Cyberman.
The way the Cybermen are directed, there's all those shots from beneath. We've got the Cyber Leader with, you know, the black carapace and
Cyber crotch.
Brain. The brain. Yep.
Big black Teflon cyber crotch. Hello.
This is directed by Andy Goddard. I think this is the only Doctor Who he does, but he does six Torchwoods.
So why did he not? Oh, just because Torchwood. I like that he's doing a lot of interesting woo-woo, as you were saying. It feels very much how you would film now rather than even 5 years ago.
Yeah. And I think also possibly part of the reason he doesn't go on to do more is, of course, very few, if any, directors from Russell's era go on to the Moffat era. Ashley Way does.
Is that a conscious choice?
Who he did Attack of the Grask. But I think it's not so much a conscious choice of I don't want these people, but probably more a choice of I know I want these people. So I don't think it's a JNT thing of I don't want anyone more experienced than me, because I think, you know, Moffat was so established as a producer that I don't think he would have thought that. And, of course, he gets writers back, certainly, from the Russell era. But I think it's probably a matter of Moffat going, I know the directors I want to work with and bring them on. And also people like Eros Lynn have kind of said, you know, when Russell and Julie went, they were my team, so I went as well, etc.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And certainly no directors from the Moffat era have thus far directed for the Chibnall era.
I think, you know, like when you take over making a big change to how the show looks, and both Moffat and Chibnall have done that.
Yeah.
So you're going to have your own directors rather than bringing back people who have a certain style associated with the previous show.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I think the Sonic joke.
I love it. I love it.
Great.
I just find this episode so much fun, and it hangs on the chemistry between these two who had worked together before in Blackpool. Mm. The TV series, not necessarily the location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting a bit of a vibe that they've both snogged and both decided to put it behind them and never mention it again.
There is a Steve that kind Mrs. of chemistry. Peel element, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Also, girl's not getting much of a look in.
No.
So this scene is the one where Russell on the commentary says, actually, this is not our Doctor Who style. The camera's too, you know, it moves too much. It's a little bit more modern. This is what we do in Torchwood. Doctor Who's house style doesn't actually do this.
Yeah, it's all handheld. It's a bit Doctor-ish.
Yeah, it is quite different. Whereas it's that, you know, stylized hyper-real thing that Doctor Who normally does in this era.
But yeah, I like the uneasiness of this camera work.
It works for the plot because we don't know what's going on, and the viewer themselves are uncomfortable and uncertain. But I don't know whether that's a conscious creative choice or not.
Yeah. I think that this is the sort of thing that Moffat would have done better than Russell, because all Russell is going to come up with is it was a tech thing that did it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas you would have to think that Moffat, you know, when he creates a mystery, he properly pays it off and does something that, you know, is incredibly clever that you feel like you would never have thought of.
And Russell said later that as soon as he watched it on broadcast, he realized what he got wrong about the ending. Yeah, I love that bit with the pocket watch. It's just a broken pocket watch.
I still wasn't convinced. Does anyone else remember their first viewing of this?
I do, actually, because it was the first episode I viewed when I moved to the UK.
Oh, gosh.
And I was at my then-boyfriend's house. Hello, Lee, if you're listening. his family house, rather, because they took me in for Christmas, which was lovely of them.
On the doorstep in a tiny basket. He's not large, dear listener. He doesn't take up a lot of space.
But, yeah, you know, this as Nathan says, we're already drunk watching this. This is the perfect episode to watch in a large crowd of people.
Yeah, we've had fans cake and non-fans.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little – do you sensing that this is already the fourth album and they're just trying to go – they're just going over the highlights and past successes and
– Well, no, because, I mean, I think this is different from the previous Christmas specials. I mean, all of the other previous Christmas specials were set, what, in Earth, like on Earth in the present day? Is that crazy?
No, you're
yeah.
right.
Yeah, they're all. And so this is the first one in the past.
Victorian Christmas,
yes,
Governor.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's the perfect time. Moffat's going to get, you know, like in 2 years' time, when he gets his first go at the Christmas special, he's going to produce something, you know, beyond incredible.
I love Moffat's Christmas specials. Oh. I love all of them. I know that's not a popular
I don't love
view.
All of them, but I do no, love I do. The first one.
I do.
I love them all, except for the first one and the last one.
Oh, my God. Oh, really? The last one's absolute nonsense.
Is that the one when they all get married to Riversong again?
No, that's good.
The mini brides.
I love that one. It's the one where they all get married to David Bradley.
Yeah, that's shockingly bad.
But I love David
I'm not going to comment on that.
absolutely.
Because I like them all except for that horrible widow wardrobe rubbish.
You don't like that one? Ugh. I love that one. That's yeah. my favourite.
She's
my favourite.
She's the worst.
Gasp.
And everyone,
but I don't particularly like this one. I didn't like it very much on the first viewing. Like, I think it's the weakest of the...
I want some darker humour. This should be... It looks like a set from Blackadder if they'd had some light. Money. But it's also a bit Black Books.
Oh, hello.
That's pretty good. I'll pay
yeah,
that.
That's pretty good.
Door.
Yeah, door. And we've got Tamsin Gregg on set again. She was very tall. Did you realise how tall Tamsin actually is? There she is again.
Yeah, I just think the problem is that it doesn't know what it's doing. I mean, the first one is, you know, the Christmas invasion, a big giant invasion with all of the people that we love waiting for the Doctor to come and save them. You know, the second one is Donna, for God's sake, what else do you need? And the third one is the Titanic
with Kylie. And
yeah,
Christmas.
Yeah.
More
and what's this? I mean, I think that he thinks, or that he must have thought, that the David Morrissey thing would be big enough to be the thing. But there's nothing else around it.
But hang on. You mean you have to say that, you know, the last three or four episodes of the show in Series 4 has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. And so where do you go from there?
Yeah, no, that is true. But I don't mean that it's the stakes aren't high because, I mean, in a way they are. It's just like, what are we doing? Like, what are we supposed to be, you know, feeling? Or how do we, you know, like, what's the elevator pitch, you know? Particularly since this mystery here.
Who are they listening
Tragedy.
To?
Tragedy. The feeling's gone. I can't go on. Woo!
It's the only time we can afford that this episode.
It was a Jason Donovan USB stick. Ouch.
Look, I think the other thing that it has going for it apart from Morrissey is the villain. And we'll talk about her when she comes. Because I think she's something.
She's a bit telescale Diana Rigg, isn't she?
Well, I think
she's great.
Yeah, I think she is, you know, one of the best villains of the year.
Until we get Diana Rigg.
The thing is, though, and I was discussing this with someone on Twitter this week, where they kind of said Diana Rigg was completely wasted in The Crimson Horror. I'm like, I'm very sorry. I greatly respect you. I think it might have been Will Maddox.
However, I
said Diana Rigg turns up, and instead of being glamorous, like she even is in Game of Thrones, she goes, no, I am going to go completely arch and over the top like I've never performed anything before. And to me, that is respecting the part to play so against her type.
Mm. Well, speaking of arch and over the top, actually, no, I think this red dress and her whole look is fantastic.
This is Dynasty Colby's, isn't it?
It's sort of Nancy Reagan
red.
It's Coronation Street, 1851.
Is she Pat Phoenix?
This is very strange in that, of course, it's, you know, being shot, what, in August or something. And so it's not a very hot day. I think they've probably done a better job with it than they did with The Runaway Bride.
Mm. It's still very bright, isn't it?
But it is very bright, though, isn't it? It is. Yeah, and the snow is very localized. She is so great.
Dervla Kurven, I think.
She is great. She's apparently now in Big Finish. She's now doing the
Miss Hartigan 4-box set. Oh.
Is she the new Miss Quill?
She's a new Miss Quill.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't they get her back?
They got her for the original one, yes, for the first lot. But
she regenerated into...
And I can kind of hear it in her inflections and tone and that sort of thing. I can see that.
Good choice.
Yeah, very good choice.
It's clear that she's a former prostitute.
She talks about men asserting themselves against her in the night.
Yeah.
Which could just mean.
And she calls out the guy who recognizes, like, who knows her last name. One of these old men knows her last name. And she calls him a cheeky boy.
I loved the Cybermen coming through the snow in this. Yes. That was one of my favorite things I did watch.
It's 10th Planet. I mean, that's what Russell's doing. And
she is the David Bradley of this episode.
Yeah.
That's a great shot. Look at that.
And I think there is
Cyber butts.
Possibly a deliberate choice here that the person who confronts her is the priest, because, of course, Dervla Kurven's breakout role was in Ballet Kiss Angel, where she falls in love with the priest. And she then left that show to do Goodnight Sweetheart as the original Phoebe. Garrett,
she left that show
after one series and was replaced with, if I may say, an actress who was much better for the role, and I very much preferred the second Phoebe. In that show.
Now, see, you have to enjoy this. These are people who run workhouses and priests, and they all deserve to die. And this is a massive triumph.
Yeah, and the Tarim Wood Beasts are involved.
They're involved as well.
Mr. Cole and Mr. Schoons could be references to Doctor Who author Stephen Cole and Doctor Who historian, recon maker, and author Paul Schoons, yes.
Paul Schoons.
But I think there was a visual effects assistant called Ian
Schoons. But Ian Schoons was just a model maker, and not, I don't mean just, but everyone, you know, everyone liked his work.
Yes.
He built the fabulous, Invasion of Time, Varden Starship, out of an old vacuum cleaner, pretty much like the acting style of this episode.
She's so good, isn't she? And this line, which really drops like a brick, but let's go for it.
The point is, they'd all still vote for her.
Yes. They will give them another 130 years.
Just a blink of an eye.
So the sexless here, Rosita hugs him and he admonishes her very gently, but like, a little decorum, darling.
That's also a very Victorian thing to do.
How did she get to know him again?
He saved her again from two men who asserted themselves against her in the night.
They were Cybermen, though, weren't they? It was the Cybermen.
I believe she talks about it later, but I could be wrong, and I could be conflating that with later when Miss Hartigan says, "I don't think he's paid you to talk."
Yeah, so
which
there is
a very dark line from Russell.
But remember when she talks, where Miss Hartigan later talks about the Cybermen will rise, and then she says, "So like a man," and it's clearly a reference to, you know, sort of downstairs. And so both of them, both Rosita and Miss Hartigan, are like at least kind of hinted at as being prostitutes, right? And see, what I think is super interesting, and maybe the only properly interesting thing about this episode, is that Miss Hartigan is an absolute genius who is one of the most powerful minds on the planet, who is able to assert herself over the Cyber King, all of that. And because she's a woman, there's no way that brilliance and superbness could ever be recognized or acknowledged. And she lives in this sort of society where she's sort of condemned to cleaning the floor of workhouses or whatever. And no one sort of comments. No one says, "You're just a woman," or "You're just a, you know, scullery wench," or whatever. How can you be such a genius? And I think that's perhaps the only kind of interesting thing happening.
I think there's some very interesting stuff happening with Rosita and Mercy, and you're quite right, Nathan. She just said there that a Cyberman came out of the shadows. So Jackson Lake here is set up exactly the way Christopher Eccleston's Doctor met Rose, you know, saving her from a monster, a man made of plastic, a man made of metal.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Do you think she's gone to the Bonnie Langford School of Hair? It's very curly.
It's fantastic. Her hair is fantastic. She just looks amazing. She just is like, she looks stunning. Before we started recording, Todd, you said she hasn't done much acting work since.
She's done some things, but it seems to be quite sporadic.
It's a shame because I really like her in this.
So this is a great moment.
It's a balloon, Penelope.
And he's wearing a Pertwee-style kind of cape thing.
Too, yeah, the next cape. Yes. No, you're right. Hartigan. What's her name? Doran Nachanachan.
Yeah, Hartigan.
Nachanachan.
Yeah.
That actress does bring this. But no, Morrissey together. They've got great warmth and they mirror each other.
Oh, I know. Very pretty Jeb.
Vela Tabashaya, I believe, is the actress playing playing Rosita.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's this person?
This is Jake. Jeb. Oh, Jeb. Jed. Jed. You're right.
Jed. Jed or Jeb?
Jed.
Just gotta write this down. I've got to do research, you see, for retrospectives and things.
That's right.
He's the he's the Nardole of this story.
Oh, she's the Bill, and which makes him the.
That reminds me of Ian Chesterton's sort of cloak from Marco Polo.
Yes,
did say it was built for two.
Morrissey brings human warmth to this, and it's pretty much the giveaway that it's not the Doctor. And I've got to admit, much as I'm, you know, probably not a great fan of Tennant, he does give otherness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he also plays this one with humility.
Oh, this is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, he's not lording it over this other person who he already suspects might not be the Doctor, but he knows
because he's listened to his heartbeat in an earlier scene. That's true. That's the moment at which he definitely knows.
Yeah, he's so gentle with him. Earpods. Sorry, snap.
She is the Jacqueline Pierce of this season, isn't she?
Oh yes, yeah.
She's so jolly, though.
Wouldn't it have been great if she'd been like a recurring villain for the season?
Or look at that smile. She's so good.
She could have been a rescued woman. Yes.
As in travel, go for the next story. Yeah. Sorry, Brendan.
I was just going to say, I will come back to the possibility of her returning later, Todd.
Ooh.
Someone else who considered.
Gotta pay
that. Russell wrote this script in about 6 days, recovering from chickenpox.
Yes.
And,
is that what he called it?
And something else. I do have it written down here. But, yeah, he was pretty much really poorly. They had to extend the schedule by a week because this is effectively the 15th episode in the production block because they started with Voyage of the Damned and just went straight through. And, you know, it took a toll. They had already planned to do a sort of gap year to let the next producer, who ended up being Stephen Moffat, get his stuff together. But the BBC was so scared of taking it off the air for a year, basically, that they almost overruled Russell.
Oh.
And there was a new controller at the BBC, and they're like, this is our most popular thing. We don't want to get rid of it. But
so long ago.
Jane Tranter and Julie Gardner basically argued, no, you know, we're not taking it off the air. We are rationing it. So when the new Doctor starts and when Stephen Moffat starts, they're going to need people hungry for it.
Event television, I feel, really works for Doctor Who.
See, I feel the opposite.
Do you?
Yeah, and I think I said this, I think I probably said this in the retrospective, because Doctor Who is a different thing each week, and so...
That's why I think it has a polarity. And you can reverse that, but if you so choose. But it does. It's a new heavenly sphere every time it appears. I agree with you on that. That's the freshness of it, but I think that can be spaced out just as well. I don't need to see it every week to be excited.
Yeah. I guess I like the sort of change from week to week. You know, you don't know where you're going to go next week. I guess you can kind of spread that out. But I think in practice what we discover from 2009, and maybe it's just the series of events around 2009 that caused this, that it isn't that successful.
I absolutely adore this because this is the first time.
Here we go.
Russell's Who, where all of the old Doctors are directly referenced.
Canon.
Yep.
Canon.
Yep.
Yeah. Paul is canon.
He nearly wasn't in Queer as Folk, remember?
Now, if only they put that cutaway of Jackson Lake in between Paul McGann and Christopher Eccleston, we could have an explanation as to why we don't see John Hurt.
He wasn't invented yet.
No, No. Time War.
No, he was still, wasn't he still a CG dragon in Merlin? was that happening yet?
Yes. Maybe.
It was?
Yeah.
It's
See, this is like, what's the Bond title sequence where they're projecting films onto the bodies of naked ladies? That's probably
Man with the Golden Wank.
Yes, yeah, because that's happening here, isn't it?
The Morris Binder. And actually wasn't Binder who came up with that. It was that other bloke. But yeah, yeah. Oh, and that's a lovely bit of telly acting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just love how gentle the Doctor is here. He's like, yes, you're not who you think you are, but you have all your achievements are still yours.
And he's still smart enough to know that there's something coming, doesn't he? Yes. And I love how the Doctor solves it, because a lot of the earlier stuff was about the void and all sorts of science fiction, you know, claptrap. And here it's just, you have too much luggage for one man.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's lovely.
Mm.
Yeah, isn't that so good? Yeah.
Well, as I said in the retrospective, David Tennant is terribly underrated at times, and I have actually enjoyed him very much in the moment, despite ticks and clicks that we talk about. I find him very watchable.
Yeah.
I do wonder if it's because usually the companion, especially Catherine Tate, is given the duty of being compassionate and the listener, while David Tennant is allowed to gnash his teeth at things. So you take away the companion and Tennant has to do that, and he does it brilliantly.
Very nicely.
Yeah.
Well, normally those, you know, sad, soulful eyebrows are reserved for his own man pain.
Yes. Yeah.
Or the women he's about to disappoint.
Yes.
On so many levels.
And in the show.
Hey.
Oh, here we go.
I think Maurice is doing a wonderful job.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I love him here
in this whole sequence. Yeah.
You know, the fake doctor thing is fun, but this is probably good, I think.
Mm. And, you know,
Doctor Who does therapy, sorry.
Yeah. That doesn't happen.
Well, truly. That doesn't happen very often. Mm.
No.
He is a smaller version of the Doctor. You know, he has saved his companion from a monster.
Yes.
The Doctor lost Gallifrey and the Time Lords. Jackson has lost his wife.
Yes.
Jackson is heroic, even though he doesn't really have a sonic screwdriver or gadgets or a proper
sonic.
TARDIS.
It's Sonic.
But you know what I mean? He's heroic without all those things.
There's no payoff to that, though, is there? And that's a problem.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know a lot has been said about the Timeless Children, but...
Can we not talk about them?
It has a similar element to this in that being the Doctor is less about, you know, having two hearts and being from the planet Gallifrey and the constellation of Cerberus, and it's more about being heroic and compassionate and kind.
Well, I mean, that's the RTD era, though. He's constantly inspiring people to do that.
Yes.
Everyone talked about how Eccleston doesn't solve the problem. He just inspires someone else to solve the problem as if that's a bad thing.
Mm.
Also extremists, you know, where you can be the Doctor even if you're really just sort of Mario.
I love extremists. Now,
so do I.
Yeah, it's good.
Before we started recording, I was rather surprised, dear listener. I believe my fellow podcasters in this room really don't think highly of this story, and I'm curious to know from each of you what you think is what's the central flaw.
Todd,
maybe it's the stakes. I don't know. I think after the end of last season, I can't answer that until.
You see,
I just feel like what's happening? Like we're having a lot of little stuff, but
yeah.
But I don't know. Is it the how it builds? I'm not sure. Like
it feels like an operetta without the songs. Definitely, there's a bit of G&S in this.
Yeah. Mm. Even like this with the little kids being marched into a thing.
And even the way they're moving about.
Brendan, I don't think it's necessarily awful. Like I'm just not in love with it.
Fair enough.
Mm. Yeah, I just think, as I've said, I don't think it has a central thing that it's about. And I think that, you know, we're halfway through and we've ditched the Jackson Lake thing completely. And so you know, what are we doing now?
You're all the timeless children.
They're all the Doctor all the time. I'm warming to the cyber shades, though, I have to say.
I thought you had a theory that every showrunner has one crap Cyberman thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that it's true. The cyber shades here.
The
cyber dad, I guess. Although I actually will forgive the cyber dad when it comes. I think, what's Moffat's one? Oh, it's the cyber brig, isn't it?
Well, that's what I called it, the cyber dad.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant James Corden. In closing.
Well, that's almost unforgivable as well.
And he invents the cyber mites as well, remember?
Oh.
I love all those things.
Brendan and I are on the same page on so many things. Right?
Not that.
I like the cyber mites and I like the cyber James Corden.
I wonder if it's that Doctor Who at Christmas is not Doctor Who. It's a different show.
Well, you know, the cyber James Corden, the fact that he solves everything by love. Or whatever.
That's awesome.
But here, she overpowers the Cybermen by her...
by just being...
campness.
Being brilliant, by being superb, so by being an impressive
person. So
there
is a precedent for it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm warming to the idea.
Yeah. I do love that she hasn't been converted. She is choosing this.
Yeah, liberation. Yeah.
But... see, there's also the thing, and I don't
I don't think he paid you to talk.
I don't know how to feel about it, because the idea is that she's full of rage and revenge and abuse and stuff. There's that line that the Doctor, you know, characterises her, and so that's why she's evil, you know, as a result of kind of patriarchy and the class system and Victorian values, essentially. But that turns her evil and she's sort of a villain. And, like, why aren't we on her side, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think some of us are.
I think possibly the answer to that, and I agree it's not fully developed.
Oh, and a little flashback.
I think possibly the answer to that is that she and Rosita have pretty much had the same experience. As you say, they're both implied to be ladies of the night, and they have both been... oppressed by men because it is this society. Rosita sides with the hero and she sides with the villain.
Yeah.
They're two sides of what can happen. And I think possibly the reason it doesn't work is Rosita is given so little to do. Because the Doctor and Jackson Lake are the center of the plot.
I love glad to have been part of your very last conversation. What were you going to say, Tom?
No, I can't remember.
So this is the heroic thing where he comes back?
This has got a headache. Part of it, certainly.
That's a great hero shot, isn't it? Wearing... with the smoke clearing.
CBS 1996.
Yes!
Oh,
well done.
can I say I completely disapprove? I stole that line when I was the Doctor for Planet Scarrow Audios, and I changed it to... basically, we had a Boris Johnson-style Prime Minister in 2011 when we made these, and my assistant punches him in the face, and I say, normally I would completely disapprove, but in his case, I shall make an exception.
He does look smart in Jan Chappell's belt. Lanyard. Jan
Chappell. Someone posted on Twitter this week that Trevor Hoyle actually explains what the Time Squad were in his novelization of Bleak 7 and the Time Squad.
Oh, there's a relief.
Yes.
they were always called the Findus Fiends because they were like frozen fish fingers. they weren't fit, were they?
Oh, the little fascinator's not really... are you looking at my cerebellum?
The ascension.
So it's ascension of the Cybermen.
Yes.
So,
Mr. Milligan! he looks like Spike Milligan! Sorry.
So the brain, I think Russell has said before that he has a very strong childhood memory of Tomb of the Cybermen and the cyber dudes brain. What sort of cyber thing was he? He wasn't a cyber controller. What was he?
He was a cyber controller. Tomb. Yes.
Yeah. The big chrome dome.
Yeah. Because, you know, he thought it was the brain because it has those veins crawling up the inside of it or whatever.
Oh.
And so that's why the brain is visible there and it's got little kind of, you know, things. That child is 40.
The upscale doesn't. Well, it's worked wonders.
I mean, it really does need songs, doesn't it?
It does. But what is this for? Like, I don't know what's happening here. These children are being oppressed. But what are we saying?
That's the source from the doctor's daughter. That globe that went along.
What we're saying is it's Christmas, so we need suffering orphans.
Yeah, well, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
But wouldn't be Christmas without children in need.
But don't you think there's a version of this that's not too far away where these children exist to fuel something? You know, it's called a cyber king. It has factory chimneys coming off the back of it. We get a reference to the sort of second industrial revolution from Miss Hardigan. You know, it's so close to saying something about sort of class or empire or colonialism, and it just doesn't do it.
Look, it's Chibnall's Dalek Emperor.
That's it. That's what Daleks look like now.
Sure it is. You watch.
Yeah. I think the script needed another week in that regard. It was Russell going, and I'm going to have like
a hangover.
I'm going to have children in workhouses. What are they for, Russell? To have children in workhouses. It's the Victorian era.
He needed to finish it a week earlier.
Yeah.
Walk away. Come back.
Yeah.
And do another.
Because it nearly is things like it seems to hint at something about, you know, the Victorian era. Does Mickey theorise that there's a cyber king in Doomsday or something like that? He comes up with the word.
Yeah. That was designated a lie.
That is a great line.
Yes. Promises to aliens have no validity.
That's not quite posh enough.
Getting a bit rough, is it?
It's still Nick Briggs, isn't it, doing all the voices?
Well, who's playing cyber leader for this one?
I suspect it is
Paul Casey.
Oh. He's usually the lead.
Is he doing the voce? No, it's Briggs doing the voce.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Always.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how this is designed for her hair.
I love the sort of cyberpunkness to it, like as if they've constructed it out of stuff that they have available. So it's a sort of beautiful brass, you know, cyberpunk excitement thing.
And now she's Queen Amidala. Queen Amygdala?
Yeah.
She might just be clever enough to have bypassed. I hope so.
Mm. Ooh, those look painful to wear. Or do you think they're CGI?
No, they are contact lenses.
Ugh, yuck.
Yeah, just like Daphne. That's the same shot of that globe going back. Just like Daphne Ashbrook had to wear.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Horrible.
And Marina Surtees in a few scenes of things.
Ooh.
In Conundrum.
Oh, that looks a bit fake.
It looks a bit Capaldi opening titles, doesn't it?
No, it looks like the Candy Kitchen.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, now you're talking.
Where are the bees and the theremin?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, like it should look like that because it should be a sort of fairy tale thing, you know, like it's Christmas and it's orphans and stuff. So it's supposed to look like that. I like that. But I just, what's it for?
What's it for?
Yeah, no, I'm being Tom in Pirate Planet.
What's it for? Yes, and all coming soon, Mary Tam in the Pirate Planet sort of action figure.
Yes. Do your top up, Mary.
20th of July, apparently, now, Richard.
Oh, golly gosh.
Oh, it'll be out by now.
Yes.
Yeah, see, she's not having any of that Cyberman crap.
Not your nonsense.
I'm Miss Hardigan.
No Cyberman pain.
Yeah, she's stronger than the
conditioning
like James Corden is later on.
Yeah. But it's because she's brilliant. You know, she's been sidelined by this society, but she's better than anyone else in it. Mm. But it's only hinted at, do you know? Mm. She's so good.
See, in a way, I wish that the Cyber King and her escaped through the vortex to come back in a sequel.
Yeah, yeah. They could have been in The Girl Who Waited.
Zap.
They could have been in last season's finale.
Wow, that would have been awesome.
Well, yes, it would have been awesome.
Except that this story never happened.
Yes, we find out in series 5.
What? We find out in series 5 that the cracks in time wipe this story out. Because there's a really interesting thing here. When the Doctor arrives in 1851, he says, oh, this is very dull and nothing ever happens. And then Jackson Lake at the end will say, this is something that will be talked about for centuries. Yeah. And the Doctor goes, oh, funny that. Yeah. And then it's never followed up. It's
Matt Smith does mention it.
It's never followed up by Russell.
Oh, I beg
And then Moffat comes in and makes it clear that's what happened. That's why the Cyber King's not ever remembered, because this whole story gets swallowed up by the cracks.
The elderly children are rescued.
Now, we have coming up the worst performance in the episode.
Oh, that gormless child actor standing at the top who needs to be rescued.
Oh, God.
But
so terrible.
He is wearing so much. I mean, I don't want to shame him. Do you know what I mean? But he's wearing a lot of mascara.
Yeah. And, like, you know, the implication is that he's not like these poor children. He's a rich child who has been caught up in the workhouse. But it's just he's too polished. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I thought we might actually cut to him. But no.
No, not yet.
I love the fact that they commit to the cyber shades despite the fact they look a bit rubbish.
Oh, me too. No. And I am absolutely on board with the one that drives the hansom cab. I think that's superb. Why not?
I just wish they'd been more shade-like and ethereal.
Rather than just gorilla suits.
Yeah. I mean, there's...
Yeah, look at that one. Howard, that one's 40. They're ill-favoured poor children, aren't they?
That's a hobbit.
there's a few hobbits. Oh, dear. Some great flashback acting there from Morrissey.
It's these children. They ruin the episode.
There we go. So that's some acting from the kid?
Yeah,
I know, whatever.
That shot of Morrissey where he looks up puzzledly over the publicity. My God, the child is terrible.
Though the child's okay in the flashback.
Yeah, the child is terrible.
But look at it. Look how much mascara he's got on.
Like, why he has no emotion upon seeing his father.
Well, he's traumatised.
Oh, but...
Oh, God, just push.
None of the other children are traumatised. They all run... I suppose they're all pre-traumatised from being workhouses.
Yeah, they're poor people. It was okay for them to be put to work. But, yeah, anyway. Oh, here we go.
Now, when I was watching this at the time, something I had said to my boyfriend of the time in the week before... You know what Doctor Who's never done? Transformers.
Well, you got your wish.
I did.
So why does Jackson Lake, if he's the Doctor, if we want to show him being heroic, why does he not get to do this?
Yeah. No, I agree.
It's just a mistake,
because
I think.
Tennant's the star.
But Tennant gets to wipe out the Cyber King and save Fred. And I think that David Morrissey's Doctor has to do one of those. Mm-hmm. Like, he just has to do one of those. But all he does is sort of stand there looking up into the sky weeping, and then later on he does a sort of fair amount of kind of talking and looking up into the sky weeping again. You know, like, he doesn't get his proper hero moment. And I don't think him running in with a bandolier full of, you know, USB sticks really kind of cuts it. Would have been great, don't you think?
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and the thing is, just swap the two roles in that scene. It's simple.
Or get him to be clever enough to have learnt enough to save, you know, to defeat the Cyber King.
Now, as the Cyber King was rising there, we had a poster of Lee Sen Chang in the corner. There it is.
Oh, my goodness.
That this is early. Almost 50 years before The Talents of Wang Chang.
Yeah. Well, he was a child prodigy. That is so great.
It's fantastic.
Todd, You like the Cyber King, the look of the Cyber King, or not?
I like the look of it. I don't understand why it is.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair enough.
No, like, I mean, if Simon invaded planets, aren't you wasting resources building something like that? Wouldn't you be
except that it looks cool.
It does. And yeah. It's something that you've brought up time and time again this past series that, you know, Russell likes to do things that are fun,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And sometimes I forget about sense. The fun
yeah.
over, oh, does it make complete sense? But it
doesn't.
It doesn't, but it's...
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's fun.
It is fun. And I'm surprised, you know, like I wondered, and I think maybe at the time I wondered whether the fact that this is, you know, like a great sort of history breaking event, you know, how come none of us know that a giant thing, you know, like this happened in 1851 on Christmas morning, like that was going to feed into all of this sort of Time Lord Victoria shenanigans that ended up happening, but it just gets dropped. I'm glad that Moffat picks it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my bits of evidence that Moffat loves RTD's Doctor Who.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And, yeah, the Doctor runs off into danger here because he's got nothing to live for.
Yeah.
Yes, escape to danger.
I remember at the time with that being annoyed that Moffat was being, you know, putting his imprimatur over the entire history of Doctor Who, but considering what we've seen in the last 2 years, I think I got off lightly.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's very true, Richard.
Look, I actually like it because I think it is picking up a plot thread that was deliberately kind of, you know.
And that annoyed people like us.
No, but I think that Moffat, that Russell might have followed up. You know, because he deliberately kind of comments on it. He sticks it out there. It's not something that Moffat thought of. Mm. He does
retcon. I can see Freddie Mercury playing this part had he lived from the same rostrum.
Don't you think it reminds you of the end of time where you've got Wrestler and you've got the two women either side and the other Time Lords?
Yeah, but I like this.
that's very true.
This should have been a musical.
Oh, wow.
This is why it's annoying us, because this is prog rock.
Yeah,
really, this is a 70s album cover, Jeff and this Wayne. Whole thing, Jeff Wayne would have done it, and it opens up into a bifold, and you've paid far too much for it, but it's great. No, it needs songs. I want songs.
Russell talked about doing a musical all the time, and I agree with you, Richard. This would have been perfect because we have all these heightened visuals, ultra-saturated.
That's the category.
Thank you, Nephthys.
Oh, she turns. She's not
liking something on
not
the screen.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that child.
I so very love the Cyber King. It's utterly impractical. it's brilliant.
Does it make tea?
Mm. It does look like it might make tea. The Breville's tea's made. I think the cat's going to unplug the mixing board.
No, I think we're okay.
And he gets to see the TARDIS fly, but he should be flying it then.
Yeah.
It's a shame because all that Tennant does is do his usual, I'll give you one chance, and then sort of fires a whole heap of kind of special effects at her until everyone goes away. You know, it's not a great resolution.
I can see why RTD chose to do it this way. He wants, David's going, he wants to make, let him be the star.
Yeah, it's like Planet of the Spiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah. So there's no flying car, darn it. I want the flying car back. Wouldn't that be great? Chibbers, I'll forgive you everything if you bring back the automobile. I'm sure
hair
Sean's
trembles
got it in
with
the
emotion.
Yes. Yeah, that's a meme.
that shot wasn't great in the upscale.
I reckon the thing looks surprisingly good in the upscale.
No. It was the balloon basket.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like the, Tennant hanging in the balloon against black drapes is not good. it's very Troughton.
Yeah. See, this, give me some politics, Russell.
Yeah. See, this is the scene where Russell, watching at home at Christmas, as he was watching this, said, I made a mistake with the ending.
So what does he say should happen?
What he says should happen is, and look, I'm presaging it because I forget how long this chat goes on for. Mm-hmm. So he's about to set Miss Hartigan free, at which point she screams at the Cybermen and they blow up. And the thing starts falling over and the Doctor has to zap it into the vortex.
Spoilers.
And the thing is, Russell, watching it at home, went, No, he should have set her free, and then she sends it into the vortex. She saves London.
Yes. Yeah.
That was what Russell thought was wrong. And, yeah. And that way, you know, she gets redemption.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have liked redemption.
Yeah.
Because she just explodes into, like, it's only her frock left. It's fabulous, actually.
But, it's fabulous, but it makes less sense than the Cyber King itself.
Yeah. But it is that idea, like, she's supposed to see what she's become, and this is her doing that. Is it? No, not yet. But it happens in a sec, but then she doesn't do anything with that except explode everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then we get another different special effect where the Doctor attacks the Cyber King with the title sequence.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, here she is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's completely right at this point. She needed to.
Yeah.
Redemption.
Oh, and she's acting her socks off, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, it's that thing of, you know, Russell clearly didn't have distance from the script as he usually would because he had to produce/write 15 scripts in the time he would usually have for 13.
Yeah.
Oh, and there you go.
There's a frock. Yeah. So, and now it's going to fall on Rosita and everyone. Yeah. So, like, he's now the great chorus. Now the Doctor's just, Morrissey's just get, you know, reduced to telling us what we just saw in the previous scene.
It's Prometheus, run sideways.
Looks great, doesn't it?
Oh, I love
it. I mean, it's an absolute cartoon, but who cares? Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah.
I mean, Russell's starting point is any time you... Well, you've said this as well, Nathan. Any time your resolution is the Doctor fires a gun at something, rewrite.
Yeah.
It's the same problem that I had with Rise of Skywalker. It's just who is able to project the most lightning from their things wins, you know. It's just not very interesting.
Yeah, I think I'm not really satisfied by it.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
There's some nice elements, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's average. Like, I give it 7 out of 10. 0.4.
I give it a 6. 0.6.
No, I think I'm with you. It's like it's just not that memorable.
Yeah. Look, I would argue of these specials, the only one Russell really gets right is The Waters of Mars and End of Time 2. End of Time 1, I think, is the worst episode Russell writes for the show.
I think there's a lot going for episode 1, but it is him kind of running on empty and kind of riding out the clock a bit.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to see what I think of Planet of the Dead because I have a little bit of a soft spot for it.
Planet of the Dead, I find is like this. It's like there's nothing I point at and go, that's absolutely disastrous. And it's like, I enjoyed the last hour, but I'm not, you know, it's not extremis, let's say.
Yeah. But, I mean, it is a season opener. We'll get to that later on.
Oh, my God. A child just showed emotion. Yeah, I mean, what's this shot?
He's staring into the dead air of the commentary.
Oh, and here we are back in the thing. And, I mean, I think this scene's quite agreeable as well.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's spoken of for centuries to come, you know.
Yeah, what's great about Moffat is that Moffat gives... no less than 3 explanations in his first 2 years as to why people don't remember things.
Yeah, no, well, he wipes out the 2-part season finale of series 4.
Yeah.
That never happened.
Yeah, yeah, there's cracks, and then he resets the universe twice.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of like that.
Oh, me too.
But it's we'll talk about this over the next number of years. It's his approach to the show is not to create a coherent world for it to happen in. He's interested in telling different types of stories.
Yeah.
Don't let the cat sit on the remote.
No. Oh, that was a good leap, Nephthys.
Yes, it's Ian Chesterton's coat from Marco Polo. It is.
Hurrah,
hurrah.
Yeah.
And this is the bit we all love.
Yes. Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's the same archway that they park in The Unquiet Dead.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Swansea.
You lied to me, Jackson. There is a Swansea. I've got this toy now. I've got the toy of this.
Have you?
It's beautiful.
Ooh.
It's really easy to put together.
It struck me watching this too, how much that stuff above the central column looks like a balloon.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Of course it does.
I love this reaction.
Oh, it's lovely.
Great, isn't it? Like, he loves it. He's not distressed by it, but that's enough.
Oh, and there's the... Yes, that's lovely.
Now, to me, this is Jackson's heroic moment.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... like, everyone in Journey's End lets the Doctor walk away because they think someone else is looking after him.
Yeah.
And Jackson refuses to accept that. And I just think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And again, Tennant's Doctor, you know, he is in pining mode here, but he's not whinging about it the way he does over Rose. He's resigned to it and he's accepting it. He's expecting Jackson to say, oh, that's so sad, off you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I would have liked a proper hero moment
I get that, and I agree, especially rescuing his son, and sometimes they break my heart.
Yeah, that's sort of...
Don't you think he looks tired?
Oh.
15 episodes.
That's right.
Oh, there's our first reference to Donna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's accepting Christmas dinner here just like he did with Jackie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, people call Jack. Yeah. He likes them. Yeah, good. Remember to close the door. I'm always really anxious when you're a fan.
In classic series, when they don't do it, it's like, oh, really?
That's how you get Sutek.
Planet of the Dead.
Ah, well, there we go. That was a happy Christmas. A
tremendous cast. Paul Casey is, in fact, the cyber leader.
Yep, of course he is. Yeah.
And a lot of people that worked very hard.
Yeah, well,
a lot of people.
Well, they're allowed to do proper credits now.
Yes. Yeah, well, they've slowed the credits down again in Doctor Who.
It's a bit jiggery, though.
Yeah, that's a Blu-ray thing, I think.
Yeah.
Jigga-jigga.
Well, do we have closing statements, or do we think we've more or less exhausted this?
It's an agreeable hour.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's totally okay, but I'm not in love with it. I liked elements as we were watching it, but, you know, I'm going to forget about it by the time I drive home tonight.
It's a perfect Christmas repast. I don't believe it sets out to do any more than it's required to. In the end, it's... have I been given truth? Do the performers believe in their own actions? And there's no one in this that lets me down. I know what you're saying about the children, but I would have liked, maybe as a two-parter with some spinning up, but no, it's for Christmas. So we just get high notes. There's a lot of sugar in this.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Hence, we're all going to do a shot of insulin together.
Another one of these cakes.
Yes, these delicious cakes. Thank you, Richard. For bringing them back to the podcast.
Yeah, brilliant.
Little angel cake, was it?
Well, I guess all that remains is for me to say, well, dear listener, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back in a few weeks' time for a somewhat fly-blown trip to Dubai in Planet of the Dead. In the meantime, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, and you can keep up with us at Flight Through Entirety on Facebook, at FTE Podcast on Twitter, and on our website, flightthroughentirety.com, where you'll find links to our other podcasts, Bondfinger and Jodie into Terror. Until next time, remember always to be nice to the help. It's the only way to ensure your invitation to one of the Cyber King's garden parties. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Good night.
See you soon.
Good then.